When I was having a discussion with someone about this initiation, he pulled out a line from the Pilgrim's Vow. All of the vows, in a sense, encompass all the others, either in present or future. And in the Pilgrim's Vow, it says, I offer, when I look at it exactly, I know the sense of it, but let me get the exact word. I will offer up all material desires for purification in the fire of divine bliss. And a friend asked me exactly what that meant, which I thought was a very good question. And I have to confess that in the moment I didn't know exactly what it meant. I hadn't really thought about it, and I appreciated the astuteness of reading it carefully enough to ask that question. But as I meditated on it and thought about it just in the moment, the meaning of it seemed wonderfully appropriate and interesting for this. First of all, it says, I will offer up all my material desires, and then I will offer up all my attachments. I mean, these are the two things that essentially define us and keep us from being in a constant state of realization, is that we are one with the infinite, we are made in the image of God, and yet we have all these other longings. Attachment is one word for it. Swamiji often uses the word, we have all these other definitions. Instead of defining ourselves in truth, which is children of the infinite, one with the constancy of bliss and love, we define ourselves instead as a physical body with certain ailments, an individual person of a certain gender who has certain desires and fulfilled or unfulfilled, and then we create children, and then we become defined by our parenting or by the presence of those children, and we have aspirations, and those are fulfilled or disappointed, and all of these things become this story that we carry around, and it's not merely an interesting tale that we tell. I know I have friends who are really enjoy novels or movies, and they'll often start telling me these fictional tales with so much what I call charming commitment that the whole story just becomes this reality that you're hearing. And every so often it will occur to me that this is just a fictional tale, but the person has entered into it with so much enthusiasm that it's all becoming alive before my eyes. Swami Kriyananda had heard about the movie Avatar, and Nirmala, who's the leader of our work in India with her husband, whose spiritual nickname is Cinemata, because she's so passionate about movies. I didn't mean S-I-N, Cinemata, but C-I-N-E, Cinemata. She told the entire plot of Avatar, you know, just so vividly that afterwards Swamiji said, well, it sounds like it's worth seeing. But we can always tell that that's a fictional event that we've entered into. And no matter how much our eyes glow when we talk about it, we always know it's a fictional event. But when we're telling the tale of our own life experience, we often forget that it's a fictional event. Because, of course, it's not something merely that I witnessed, it's something that happened to me. And, of course, that changes everything, because now it's my story. And we don't realize until we have moved deep enough into the ocean of spirit that it was fictional in the sense that waves rising and falling on the surface of the ocean actually do rise and fall, but they aren't what they appear to be. You know, waves go up and waves go down, and we think that some great change has taken place. But the nature of water is that it's always going back to that equilibrium, and no matter how much it goes up, no matter how much it crashes, no matter how much the wind blows, no matter how powerful the storm, the ocean really remains unchanged, doesn't it? You can't say that the ocean is ever, forever fundamentally changed by all the waves that crash and rise and fall. And so in our life experience, we are in fact the infinite ocean. And the nature of that ocean is unchanging bliss. It's eternal, it's immortal, it's untouched, above all, it's unchanged. It has no likes or dislikes. All of the story that we tell never really happened. He's just a pleasing fiction. Now, we go to the movie and we have the experience. And even if we retell it, we relive it in our mind. And so we go to the surface of the ocean, which is where most people live. The surface of the ocean, and it's always going up and down. So what would we think? We would think that it was really happening. And only when it occurs to us that maybe there's a certain suspicious quality to this experience, which builds up over lifetimes, and it's a gradually dawning divine memory that we can't always bring up to the conscious level. Most of us cannot remember the many incarnations that we've had. Sometimes we get a glimpse, sometimes something breaks through. Sometimes we go somewhere or meet someone and have an extraordinary, uncommon familiarity. Someone was telling me recently that they walked past a store, a Tibetan store. We're doing our school play on Tibet, so that was the subject. And she said she was just walking down the street, never given the subject matter a thought, saw this store of Tibetan things and was just kind of sucked inside. And standing inside all of a sudden was, without even knowing what she was feeling, was experiencing a reality that was totally familiar to her. You know, just from San Francisco to Tibet, just by taking a couple of steps. So every so often it breaks through. But usually on the conscious level, we can only remember this story. But our soul has a deeper memory than just our brain, really. And so over time, there's a certain suspicious quality. We go through the period between lifetimes. We have all these desires that we imagine are going to fulfill us in a certain way. We think that this time is going to be really different. In Autobiography of a Yogi, its master uses one of the many exquisite phrases. After all, it assumes a certain anguishing monotony. That's even really much more intense than just pure tragedy, isn't it? Tragedy at least keeps us engaged. Monotony is really like, I remember, this is completely irrelevant, but a friend of mine, he has 5 children. And when the 5th children came, and the child was learning to use the potty, and the whole family was cheering the child about the potty, he turned to his wife and he said, "Are we here again?" You know, it just sort of sums it all up, doesn't it? Oh, here I am in an aging body. Here I am in a disappointed love affair. Here I am rejoicing in the something wonderful. Are we here again? Because the waves of the ocean are just a pleasing fiction. It's really that deeper level that's true. But we are identified with that. And merely being identified with the surface of the ocean, you have to understand, does not make you or me any different actually. And that's the magnificent paradox that we have to contemplate all the time, that no matter how deeply identified are, we have become, I mean, even the worst criminal, totally committed to absolutely dark energy, it hasn't touched the pure nature of his own light. It's just it's an amazing thing to contemplate. Swamiji once, when he was being tormented by what he loves to define as self-declared enemies, because he never called them enemies. They declared themselves to be his enemies. They were behaving very badly. They were not behaving like good little boys and girls at all. And Swamiji admitted once that he was feeling discouraged by it. And he prayed to Babaji and he said, "Why are you letting these people have power over me? You know, why are you letting these evil, undharmic people actually be able to influence not his inner life, but his outer life?" And Babaji answered him, "They are all my children." Just like that. And suddenly Swamiji stood back and he realized, it's not enough to accept the tests that come to you. We must love them. We must rejoice in them, because they are given to us by God to redeem us from our delusions. And why would we not be happy? If we had been kidnapped and were held in some dark room for an interminable period of time and somebody came to get us out, would we resent being rescued? So God comes to rescue us. He rescues us from our own misunderstanding. Now back to where I was coming from. We are solid gold. We are absolutely pure. We cannot be more perfect and pure and one with the Spirit, because there's nothing in creation but the Divine Spirit, and that's who we are. But we don't always remember, nor do we always manifest according to that perfect nature. But no matter how much we take the solid gold of our nature and roll it in the mud, no matter how thickly encrusted we become with that mud, it never touches the purity of the gold inside. That's really something remarkable to meditate on. The evilest person you can imagine has only allowed a shadow to come between himself and the light. There is no change in his inner nature. And then what happens is we have to be scrubbed off. That's all. We have to be scrubbed off. And sometimes our misunderstandings and our self-definitions are a little more than skin deep. And so the scrubbing process sometimes makes us a little raw on the outside, doesn't it? I remember, speaking of movies, some movie or another that was about a nuclear plant, and every so often when somebody would get contaminated, they would go into this sort of semi-hysterical scene where they would have to be scrubbed down, and it was very unpleasant. It stays in my mind because it was such an unpleasant image from a movie. But you know, sometimes we get really contaminated, and God plucks us off and he uses a steel wool on us, and we don't really like it very much. But what is the alternative? That we should be left to rot? You know, sooner or later, the gold of our nature has to come out. So what happens when you take a vow, any vow of this type, is we're saying to Divine Mother, you know, I don't want to just be passive in this process. I want to actively declare that I want to work with you. I don't want to just wait and have you come and drag me out somewhere and then finally, you know, put a candle flame, you know, just sort of a few feet away from me and warm me up a little bit. I want to cooperate. I joke sometimes that one way or another it's going to happen. And either we wait till the fire gets so hot behind us that we take a step forward, or else we see the light in front of us and we start walking toward it. And sometimes we do have to have a little push, but we can sort of feel the heat coming and start moving. And this is what this pilgrim vow is. I will offer up all material desires, it says, for purification in the fire of divine bliss. Isn't that interesting? And it doesn't say I will give them up. It doesn't even say you'll discipline yourself. It just says I'll take who I am, because the next line is my attachments. Who I am, my desires and my attachments. And whatever we desire and whatever we're attached to, whatever form we have put it into, it always represents, everything in this material world is a symbol of the deeper reality that's behind it. Nothing in itself is what it seems. Even we think of the spiritual eye being reflective of the physical sun, but Master says it's just the opposite. The physical sun is the symbol of the spiritual eye. The physical moon is the ego getting its light only reflected from the sun. And this is the real truth. That's why everything in this world is just given to us as a clue. It's a giant treasure hunt. And as we become more accustomed, we begin to see in all those clues signs of Divine Mother. One of Master's beautiful poems in Whispers from Eternity says, I looked around and saw no doorway to the infinite. And then I clarified my vision, and now I see doors everywhere, is how he put it. And then he lists out all these things, the hearts of flowers, the laughter of children, the beauty of song. Everyone is a door. He began to see it as a symbol going into that. So for us, we have these material desires, and what they represent to us is our inner longing for happiness, for fulfillment. There's nothing wrong with having desires. Of course we want fulfillment. Of course we want love. Of course we want beauty. I mean, that's what it is to be a human being. That's what it is to be a part of creation. Creation is infinite beauty, perfect love, perfect happiness. We are made in God's image, and we naturally want to be what we are. But we're a little bit on the surface of the ocean, so we see a beautiful human being, and we want to be close to that human being. We want to love that person. We want companionship. We want not to be lonely. We want security. We want to make a beautiful home. We want to be an artist. We want to be a musician. We want to raise children. We want to give love. These are all the attributes of the soul. It's just that we can't quite see it in its pure form. So God gives us symbols. We're birthed to a mother. We're made of her body. She holds us in her arms and nurtures us from her own self. How could we have a more perfect symbol of being made from Divine Mother's own being, being held in her arms, nurtured from her own spirit? So what we want, what we're attached to, is just simply the best that we know. But just as a little child learning to do something, or a grown-up person learning to do something, we take our little effort to do a painting, and we take it to a better artist. And we say, what can I do with this? We take our little fashion design, and we take it to a greater professional, and we say, show me what I'm really trying to make here. And someone who knows better says, well, the shoulder's a little too big, the hem's a little too long, the red is a little too intense, you need some other color back here. Oh, we say, that's right, that's just what I was trying to do. And we're so grateful for it. So we take our desires, and we take the things that we're attached to, and we offer them into the fire of divine bliss to be purified, which is to be clarified for us, so we'll know what it is that we're really longing for. And of course, that takes courage, because that's saying, I'm not already perfect, I admit it. Everything that I think I want, I'm ready to learn something higher. And it takes courage because it always means change. But really, we have to ask ourselves, am I perfectly happy right now? You know, is this the best I can ever imagine for myself? And that says nothing about that we might be really wonderful now. But is this the best I can possibly imagine? And obviously, all of us have been touched, at least from time to time, by an infinite spirit. And so we know there's more. So everything that we desire, everything that we're attached to, we offer for purification. Divine Mother, here it is. Here's my little art picture. Show me how it can be better. And she says, oh, you're a much better artist than this. You're a much better lover than this. You're a much better friend than this. Let me show you how. And just as it takes effort to perfect any art, so the art of self-realization takes effort. And sometimes we're happy to make that effort. Sometimes we're not. I went through a 25, almost a 30-year process with Swami Kriyananda of learning how to write. And I would bring to him the things that I had written, and he would throw them away. He would throw them away sometimes without even reading them. He would hold it in his hand, and he could tell that it didn't have enough magnetism. And I actually stopped writing for a while because I tried to be brave, but I couldn't take it anymore. And he was always right. And then he would, you know, do whatever needed to be done. And I would see from what he had done what I hadn't done. Then actually, I moved here. And I didn't have to take everything I wrote to him, so I started just writing. And I had started writing advertising. And I had to learn to say everything in 25 words or less. And I began to see how many extra words I had in everything I had written all the time, as he said so charming to me once. You don't know what to say, so just to be certain, you say it 3 or 4 times. But I remember from time to time after that first 10 years, and then I stopped, and then I started again, you know, taking things for him to see and having them still. Sometimes he would read them, but just essentially throwing them away. And I got a little stronger about it, and I remember saying to David once, I so hoped he would like it this time, you know, and not even really that I expected him to, but I just hoped he would. I just hoped I would be off the hook. But I didn't quit, you know, because partly because he kept throwing it away, because he always knew that there was something in me that was better. And I began to realize he wouldn't have bothered to throw it away if it was my best, because he always knew there was something in it that was better. Now, in all our lives, God takes what we've worked so hard on and he throws it away. Not because he doesn't love us, but because he does. You know, he doesn't want to spoil us. Children who are raised by mothers or fathers where the child makes a puny effort and the child says, oh, you're a new Picasso, you're an Einstein. Poor child grows up never learning how to work. Because whatever he does, parents say, well, that's perfect. A divine mother is much too good a mother. So let's just cooperate. I bring to you all my attachments to be purified in the fire of divine bliss. Because by comparison, you see, the awful thing that would happen is every time Swamiji would throw my writings away, almost in that moment I would realize how bad it was. Prior to that, I would think it was good. But it wasn't because he threw it away, it was because suddenly I could see it through his mind. You know, even sometimes I would just send it by email, and as soon as I'd push send, I could tell it was bad. I couldn't tell before, but I could tell immediately after. And then I would send a second email that says, wait, wait. This was when I actually began to be able to finally send him things he really liked. But the first one often I would have to send the first thing, and then the second email would be, don't read that one, wait for the next one. But that, you see, we just get in there with God. And then God begins, we become our own teacher too. Because we become so committed to the process that we begin to know. That's what you're all promising tonight. I've committed myself to the process. You haven't committed yourself to perfection, as Swami himself said, to being perfect. As Swami said, if you were perfect, why would you take a vow? But we've committed ourselves to cooperate with Divine Mother so that the words that we're saying tonight will be fulfilled. And that's our prayer for all of you, is that when you say these words tonight, they go deeper and deeper into your heart so that every syllable of it will become your own heartbeat, because it is. So, let us begin.